You're listening to Stealing the Blinds, a weekly poker podcast by students of the game for students of the game. Join Dell and guests in conversations about poker theory and bridging the gap between theory and application. We're all in this together. This week's topic, conversations with Manit Madan.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stealing the Blinds. I want to start off by promising that we are not going to talk about the Jack 4 offhand. We will not talk about it at all, other than what I've just said. Being as there's been a plethora of scandals in poker over the last couple of years, we had an opportunity to get an expert in radio frequency ID on the show, and we're going to have him on the show to talk about security going forward. Streaming's here to stay. We need to find a way to take and make it so, well, Jordan, we need to make it so that it's something people can trust, right?
Yeah, people enjoy it. And it used to be that you need a huge production in order to put on a good stream. And it wasn't even streamed. The Poker After Dark stuff, the high stakes poker stuff was all recorded and they could edit it. It was tough to get an invite to those games. And it's pretty tough to play when they're like $1 million buy-ins. But now you've got places where they're live streaming regular 1-2 and 2-5 games. So it's definitely the future as far as the community that likes to be involved. So in order for it to stay, you need to build trust. And in order to have trust, you have to kind of get around the scandals that have popped up recently.
And in that same vein, you know, one of the problems with it has been cost. And that's another thing that our guest is working on today, is bringing down the cost of that whole streaming production. With that, I want to welcome Manit Madan to the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
First of all, tell us a little bit about your company that you're starting here and working on.
Sure. Yeah. So I run a company called RF Labs. We started this a few years ago now, probably at the beginning of the COVID times, kind of when I started really getting into understanding the theory behind poker and how it's played and how people look at the game, how people analyze and study the game. And I realized that there was a huge gap in live poker specifically, where that data that you have in online poker isn't available in live poker. And players have this whole skill gap between the players who grind online and study online and people who play live. And that happens because of two reasons. One is because of the access to data, and the other one is the speed of play and the number of volume that you kind of get through, right? So I kind of looked at that and said, how can we bring technology that's been used for live streaming for so many years and provide that for players, where you can now scan RFID chips and cards and track the full game and use that data to help improve your game? And slowly we started to build live streaming modules and analytics modules for players and for card rooms. Now we're at a point where we have a system that can live stream games automatically. It can run 24/7. It doesn't take that much space. It's significantly cheaper than solutions out there, way more secure using modern technology protocols. And it also provides data back to players. It makes the overlays better. So we're doing a lot of things to kind of help the card rooms, help the players, and help the viewers experience poker better altogether.
One of the things that stands out to me there is you talked about tracking the stats of players. I know that you have RFID chips in the chips themselves and in the cards also, so that helps track all that. What I'm hearing is that this would be great for live coaching. I know that a lot of people are thinking more in terms of streaming and stuff like that. But do you see this as an application to helping people just be better players?
Yeah, that's kind of how we started off, right? That's what I initially wanted it to be. When I started, it was just a way for, it was more like a side project of how can I get my friends to come play on this table and we just analyze each other's game and get better, right? And then I started to talk to local coaches in the area. I'm from Atlanta. That's kind of where we started. There are not many card rooms out here. There's only one at the time when I started this. And we started talking to them, and they were the ones who were like, hey, we have a live stream table. Can you like replace this and automate it so we don't have to have a full production team and all that stuff? It's really difficult for one person to handle that. So that's kind of how we got into live streaming. And I realized that right now the benefit to live streaming is significantly higher than it is for directly for coaching, the way the system works. But I do think that, and we're talking to a lot of these coaches like Matt Berkey and places like that, where how can we use this data to help their players improve and get better at the game? And how can we help live players just sitting on a live stream also get better at the game? And I think there's a lot of benefit on both sides.
That's really cool. I didn't realize that it was RFID in the chips as well. I've seen a couple streams where their solution is to put a microphone on the dealer and the dealer will just announce what the bet sizings is. So then the person in the back room And I mean, I've been on a couple like recorded, you know, mostly just people that I know, not like a Texas Card House streamed. And then so something goes wrong, that the person who's running it always comes in and it's like, hey, everyone stop, like pause for a second. We're missing a read, or like, we don't know this bet size, or someone's stack size is wrong because the data is just not lining up in the thing. And I mean, the reason we recorded it was for that, so we could do a review. It was a live recorded coaching thing. So I feel like on two sides of the fence, because it's pretty awesome to know your stats after a while, to be able to say, like, let's say this is, you know, standard in all card rooms, to go play for a year and be like, here's my stats for the last year. But I don't know how I feel about everyone knowing all that information as well. So it's definitely really cool in the sense of like getting people involved in the game.
Yeah. And I think there are kind of two sides to that. First, you kind of mentioned the microphone thing and the audio, and you're right, that's how all live streams today work, right? And when I first looked at that, we realized that the problem with the headphones and the dealer talking to them, we tried doing that ourselves, where we would just give the dealer headphones and automate and recognize what they say and then use that information. But we realized there are three issues with kind of having a control room in general, right? One is you have to pay someone to sit back there and type in bets. So you can only do it for a few hours a week. You can't do it 24/7 when you're running games, right? And you can't do it for 30 tables at a time. The second thing is security, having someone mainly looking at that. And that's kind of the issue we're seeing with the recent like controversies. And the third thing is the ability to have that level of accuracy. And that's something you brought up, right? Of how can we accurately get 100% of the data and have that not mess with the game experience, right? We haven't added like big screens in the middle of the table or massive buttons and stuff like that to mess with the player experience. We wanted to feel normal. And that's why RFID chips was the best way to go about it. And I think we're the only ones right now doing RFID chips inside with a poker table.
What this makes me think of is when people do a staking agreement online, it typically what you'll have the player do is play a bunch of hands and then send their log over. So you can prove how many hands they played, you know what they won. So I can't tell if Dell's staking me or I'm staking Dell. Like, we can't play 1,000 hands online and then say, well, I lost, and just keep the stake. But it's super difficult to stake people live, because if I go give Dell $1,000 and he goes down to a casino, he could just like take a picture of it and then wait for like some bad beat on the board, take a picture of that and send it to me and be like, yeah, I lost, and then just like pocket the money. So I wonder if it opens up the door to make it more accessible to have that kind of relationship. If you can go take your RFID readout and be like, here's the hands that I played for the last, you know, week. And then you can go through that with your person that's either staking you or coaching for profits or whatever. So
yeah, no, definitely. We've also talked to a lot of like vloggers, and they kind of say the same thing, because they have to sit there and write notes on every hand that's interesting. And you don't know when a hand's going to be interesting until after it's over. So you have to keep paying attention and make sure you remember every single thing, or record it, every single aspect of it, right? So just having the ability to quickly just look at 100% of your hand history after the game and analyze that. Same thing with staking. And I think that kind of leads back to the thing you were mentioning earlier, right? There's this kind of dilemma people have, is like, oh, this data makes me better, but also everyone has access to this data, right? And we've seen the same thing with the evolution of online poker over the last 20 years or so, where I think that as a whole, it brings the entire game together and makes the game better, right? If you had a card room that was kind of focused on providing data to all their tournament players as a whole, that would be better for the tournament. And on top of that, we kind of give the ability for every card room and every player to kind of opt in and out, opt out of every feature they want. We have card rooms who are like, hey, for our tournament, we want all the information to be publicly available to everyone. So that way, if you kind of go in, you can opt in tournament and say, hey, I want to know what the rankings are of the players and all that stuff, so I can start scouting them. And it adds another dynamic to a game. On the other side, you have a card room that's saying, we don't want any of this information available to any of the players. We just want the live stream, or we just want security, or we just want the players to be able to see their own data and nothing else, right? So we have kind of both sides and the ability to mess with all these things and see what works and what doesn't work. But I think in the end, this kind of data is better for the game in general.
I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. We're probably going to come back to this later, but I want to make sure we cover the trust issue. Poker has a trust issue right now. Online poker's had trust issues forever. And I can remember telling people over and over again, there's nobody building bots to rob you at 5 cent, 10 cent. So then some people made liars of me and built bots that were robbing people at 5 cent, 10 cent. So I'd like to think that we can get to a point where at least live streaming, you know, there should be a trust issue. And what I'm hearing, what I've heard from you on a couple of other things that you've been on, is that the problem isn't at the table. The problem isn't You know, everybody thinks that somebody's going to walk in there with a computer and pull the signal out of the air, and they're going to just magically know everybody's card. And that's not really the problem, is it? It's the back end. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing is that you're just eliminating a lot of the back end with your technology.
Yeah, I know that's completely right. I think that we kind of look at it from a more modern perspective, I would say, because the way that the whole poker industry is used to seeing live streaming is in a very, very like customized way. And what I mean by that is, if you look at any of these places that are live streaming, these card rooms, or even the big live streams, or even people, I've seen people who can afford to have one of these tables at home for like their big home games, just to like share with others, right? So I think all these case scenarios, the software and the technology is built for you to kind of just host it yourself, take control of it yourself, because it's a very niche market, right? These companies aren't building like a solution like the iPhone or the MacBook or like Windows computers, right? They're not building an all-in-one solution that has security in mind, that has user interface and experience in mind and all that stuff. And it makes sense because the market's not there for that. But when we look at it, we kind of think we need to have players to be able to trust our solution the same way they trust storing some of their important information online, right? And I think that's only possible because, for example, and I think I mentioned this on another podcast maybe, but imagine if you had to kind of store all of your important bank documents and information like that in a server in your own house, right? Now you have to worry about, is my Wi-Fi password good enough? Is someone be able to just walk around my house and access that data and all that stuff? And that's just not how it's meant to be. That's not how it is accessed today, right? And I think the same thing should apply to these poker tables and these live streams, where you shouldn't allow the card rooms to have to worry about, are they correctly setting up the live stream setup, or are they correctly storing the data or having the control room running a specific way? That should all be in the hands of the technology and the technology that's being provided. And I think that's kind of our duty now. So what we're kind of doing is saying, let's get rid of that control room. Let's automate everything. Even in scenarios where you do want a control room for better production quality. For example, we're working with Texas Card House right now, and they want to be able to have someone sitting there in the back just to make sure things are going right. That person shouldn't have access to the whole cards unless they do like a 2-password authentication with the general manager and the production manager, right? So we're taking those steps to make sure that we're using the right security protocols, we're running bounty programs with cybersecurity experts. We're doing everything we kind of need to make sure that this is the latest level in technology and security.
Yeah, typically in the IT universe, the biggest issue becomes social engineering, not actual like hacking, essentially. Is people give up their passwords because they get an email that says, you know, hey, I'm from whatever domain and we need to reset your information credentials, and they blast that to 1,000 employees, and then one of them, you know, trips up. And so what we've seen in the past is always that it's the human element. So once you remove the human element from the entire loop, if you can automate the whole thing, yeah, it makes it definitely a lot more secure.
Hey, you're completely right. A lot of people have kind of told me the last week, they're like, hey, you're trying to say that your system is like super secure, but even places like Uber were hacked, or Equifax were hacked, right? So these are massive corporations with cybersecurity teams and stuff like that. But you realize that these hacks, for most of the time, and 90% of the time, it ends up being because one of the admins leaked some information, or someone had admin 123 as their password or something like that, right? So that's something that's kind of going to be out of the control of the software at some point, right? So you're completely right. Social engineering is the biggest kind of case scenario, and that's what we've seen in poker as well in the past, or at least allegedly.
I've got to ask a question about that. I'm not sure about my passwords, if they're secure enough. All my passwords are Jordan Sweet 123. Is that secure enough?
I'm not a security expert myself, but I can tell you that's not a good idea.
Oh, okay. I'll change them.
I'll change them soon.
So I think that, again, I'm only asking this question because I already heard the answer, but I'm going to ask the question again. And actually, we just did our little version of the Jack forehand. I'm not going to talk about the hand. What I want to talk about is that in there, Jordan had a scenario where he said, well, you know, how much would it cost for somebody to be able to hack it and do it, and how much would it take? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And I know Jordan doesn't, but my take on it was you could probably pay for that in one stack off, but it's not that easy, is it? What we're talking about there is not easy to do. Is that correct?
I would say it isn't easy, but it really depends on the level you're kind of getting to, right? So in terms of, if you're just trying to do it for one hand, it's going to be pretty straightforward because you can just kind of pay someone off, wait for the perfect time and do it and not be very suspicious, right? But most likely, if someone's doing something like this, they're doing it repeatedly over multiple hands. They're not doing, if they're doing it on a stream, which is the most viewed stream in the world, that adds a lot of factors to it. If it's a casino that's following a proper state's regulation, where you have certain cameras, security cameras. So all those kind of things end up adding up, right? And I think if you're looking specifically in that scenario, I think it's not impossible. It's actually not even that difficult, considering there are so many security leaks in those kind of situations. But it would also require someone who knew what they were doing to kind of get away with it, right? So, and I don't know how many people there are out who have that kind of ability, but it is definitely possible, yeah.
So I saw a really cool video, I guess you could say disturbing, a while ago, of people who went up to like houses, and they had like a reader and a relay. And so they held the reader and the relay up to the kitchen window or the front door where people might have their car keys. And then it would read the car key information, and then it would relay to someone who's standing near the car. And they essentially were relaying the car's RFID signal to, like, from the keys to the car, to, and then it would unlock it. And then they would just get in, and then they drove it up onto a tow truck and then just like drove off with the car. What I was trying to get at was theoretically the same thing could happen, but the logistics behind it is super difficult, because like I could bring in an RFID scanner and scan my own cards, and I can like intercept the signal that's being read from the card to the table. But all that does is I'm intercepting my own information. But somehow it's plausible, like you could, if you could intercept the information from the other cards, then you could get back around it. But again, like that takes some social engineering. And that's really where the biggest part of the issue is. Do you trust everyone that's involved in the system? So taking more and more people out of the mechanics of how it works makes it more secure for sure.
When I think of an RFID table, I think of something that is, quite frankly, beyond my means. The cost of a deck is beyond my means. This whole process is just not beyond my means. Or at least I felt that way until I watched you on Rec Poker the other day. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. You're really doing your best to bring down the cost here. I'd like you to go into that a little bit, because I think a lot of people think that this is technology that they can't afford. And I think it's going to get very affordable very quickly.
Yeah. And I think I kind of felt the same way a few years ago when we started this. And that was one of the most daunting factors, is like, if you want to build something like this and you want to kind of solve a problem, it has to be accessible, readily available, and affordable, right? And I think to kind of do that, our focus was on two things. How can we maintain accuracy and quality while reducing costs, right? And then once I started to dig in more, I started to realize that all these companies that are building poker equipment and RFID technology and all this stuff, they're taking huge margins, because that's the only way they can make the money back, right? For a single deck that you get from some factory in China, you have to take huge margins for that to actually be worth the cost, because the market is so small, right? And I think that's kind of the repeating factor here in terms of security, in terms of the cost of building a proper system, or the cost of building an integrated system, or bringing the cost down. All these companies that are doing this are worried that the market is too small, so it's not worth it unless they do have very high prices, right? And we kind of look at the other way, because for me, I'm not looking at this in terms of we're going to do this for a couple of card rooms. We're looking at how can we make this technology available in one way to homes, right? If you want to run a game with your friends and family every weekend and you just want to record it, or you want to see that data, or even if it's not even poker related, at some point we were talking to someone who was like, for their kids, they want an Uno table where you can have different like TV screens that are popping different things, right? So more of the social aspect of it, right? We're kind of looking at that kind of side of things and seeing how can we bring the cost of everything down so low where people can actually afford this. And one way we do that is kind of by putting it on the software. So for us, when we sell our tables, we're selling them at current RFID table. If you were to buy one, you'd spend about $8,000 to $9,000 on the antennas. You'd have to find a manufacturer locally to build it for you. They'd put the things together. That would be another couple thousand dollars. Now you're spending $150 per deck. And then you have to pay someone to type in all the bets, right? So altogether, you're paying $15,000 up front on top of that operational costs, right? For us, we're selling the entire system with the computer built in, the tablet built in, the LEDs that are showing action, the antennas, the table, all together at $7,500. That's today, right? Where we're not getting many or hundreds and thousands of orders on day one, right? We've only been selling for a few months now. So we're selling the whole thing at $7,500. And the software has like a monthly subscription, right? And to card rooms, we're charging $300 a month. If you're a home table, we charge completely different things. But and to the players, they have an app. And the app has all the data that you want. And if you want unlimited features, it's $10 a month. So when I walk into the card rooms, a lot of these players are like, it's only $10 a month. That's just a big blind, right? You just give one big blind a month or sit out a bomb pot and you have access to all your data. And it's because we're looking at big numbers. We're not looking at 10 or 20 people. We're looking at the entire poker community kind of back us here.
I would gladly pay $10 a month to have all the information I get when I play online. you know, to be able to look at that and break it down. And yeah, that's amazing. Even the cards you said were cheaper in the chip, right?
Yeah, the cards we're selling. So like I was saying before, right? Current companies charge $150 per deck of cards. Our first deck cost us $75 and we were just selling it at $75. But over the last 2 years, we've been able to bring the price down to $10 a deck. And these $10 decks are amazing because they actually have our custom RFID stickers inside. So you can bend them a lot better. They don't break as easily. You can customize the back. They're a lot thinner. So everything's kind of more disruptive in a way, right?
That was going to be my question is, the RFID decks, though, the cards are just horrible. I hate them. So that's really cool.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, ours aren't exactly where I want them to be yet, right? They're still kind of feel more like RFID decks than a normal plastic Copag or Faded Spades deck, right? So I think we have plans to kind of get there over time. But right now we're kind of focused on how can we get the same RFID quality stuff to there even better at an extremely lower cost and then provide a great solution to people.
So if I'm putting on my pro player hat now, a lot of issues with people playing online is they say, well, it's difficult. Like the online is full of crushers. Like because of the data's out there, it's a bit of a different environment because people can go study like we've been talking about this whole time. So I'm trying to look towards the future and I'm thinking of poker players as people who are taking the game seriously. If we want the game to grow, what ends up happening is what you see in other sports where as the skill becomes more clear, it's harder to get people to play at that level because they realize, well, I can't go beat that person. So the best analogy is like professional sports. You don't see people playing like recreational baseball, pickup basketball games for money. Like the people who are making money in basketball, people that are sponsored and all that. But so I'm thinking now further into the future, if this is mainstream, like you can have money coming into the pool from advertisements and all that. Like if you have ads on the app, like as long as there is money coming in from another source than the players, like it's possible that a long, long way down the road, you have tournaments with like a heavily discounted buy-in because the majority of the pool could come from the stream itself. So if you've got a tournament that's live streamed that, you know, a million people are watching because they want to watch all their favorite players. If you can stream every single table and all I have to do is log onto the app and be like, oh, Dell is playing table 10. So I click on a table 10 and I get to watch him play table 10. And now the stream brings in $100,000. Wow. Like that could be the whole player pool, right? That could be the whole tournament like prize pool right there. So then the people playing only have to, you know, maybe buy in for $50, what normally would have been like a $500 buy-in.
That's a great point. I think there's a lot of sides to it, right? We've seen data and analytics in the past change a lot of sports. You'll see kind of with baseball too, how the whole origination of fantasy leagues kind of started with this new idea of stats and data analytics coming in, even with StatCast for MLB. You can see how like the viewership and the way these things kind of grow is directly correlated with the amount of data that's coming in to help the game go better. And I think what you're talking about in terms of poker, it's actually even more interesting because we have what's called like the RF score, right? It's kind of like an ELO or like rating, like a chess rating for poker. So you can see like how good your performance is aside from variance and luck and stuff like that coming in. And we're still constantly improving that by talking to players. But what's interesting, what I've noticed is if I have a score of 1100 and I know Daniel Negreanu has a score of 1900, that won't stop me from playing on a table with Daniel Negreanu, right? Because in poker, you have the ability to still win even if you're in a place where someone's ahead of you by some means, right? Or someone has a greater edge. And I think that's an important factor because it's very different to play basketball versus Michael Jordan versus playing poker against Daniel Negreanu, even though they both might be known in history as some of the great players, right? And today there are a lot more players in poker who are at that level or beyond that level, right? Mostly because of the data. So I think there's a lot of different factors that kind of come in here. And I think in general, the data doesn't really push as much as a skill gap as people may think. And I don't think it's that similar to kind of other sports in that way.
I think that when we're talking about the data, I think that you're going to have you're going to have different groups of people when it comes to that data. You're going to have people that have no interest in it. You're going to have people that are deeply interested in it, but have no idea what to do with it. You're going to have, you know, the next level, which, you know, might have some clue what to do on like maybe first level thinking and second level thinking with it. You're only going to have a very few that are going to be really deeply into that and being able to know what to do and apply it. So does it make a difference in the game? It certainly does. It improves the game. One of the things that I think that's exciting about the data is in live poker, poker players lie to themselves all the time, right? So like, I'd love to play on one of your tables. I want to play on one of your tables so bad right now, because I don't care who you are, you're going to lie to yourself. You know, the question is how much? And when you take and have to look at the data, you suddenly cannot lie to yourself. You know, you have that evidence there that says, oh, no, you really did play this hand from this position like an idiot. You know, you didn't play it perfectly and you didn't play it from the button like you thought you did it. You played it from the low jack and it's not even supposed to be in your range there. All that stuff helps us to be more honest with ourselves and take a deeper introspective look at ourselves. So data never scares me, because I know not everybody's doing that.
Yeah, well, from the community as a whole, though, the idea of like not tapping the tank, not teaching on the table, it all kind of comes back to this, like, don't tell people how bad they actually are. But in reality, like, my biggest issue with that is, well, you're just bum hunting at that point. Like, you're not attempting to get better at the game yourself. You're attempting to find profit only by playing against people that are worse than you, which really is kind of an issue that I have in when I go play live, and people will be like, well, this table's, you know, a better table. And the reason they're saying that is because they think they could beat everyone there. Well, like, you're putting more effort into getting better at the game yourself. That's different than like, well, you only find your edge against players that you think are terrible. And then players know, like, there's definitely people out there who are willing to just go play for fun, and they know that they can afford to play. Like, that's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that we kind of really noticed. And when we're talking to players, you notice that there's kind of like this vocal minority on both sides, right? Where you have the high rollers, or like even the regs, who are kind of like, we don't want data available to anyone because that makes them better, and then that reduces our edge. They kind of look at it in terms of it's kind of not great for the game because they can't like use that against other fish, right? And that's one side of it, right? Because they feel like they don't need the data to improve themselves, so it shouldn't be available to others. And then you have the other side, which is the people at the beginning of like the Dunning-Kruger effect, who are like, hey, I already know everything. I don't need this information. What VPIP ranges, none of that matters, right? That's just GTO nonsense. And I think that there is some kind of truth to both sides of those, right? But when you look at it, majority of people who kind of fit in the middle, and you'll kind of see this, New York Times recently said that there's over 120 million people in the world who know how to play poker, right? But only a few million people end up going to card rooms and casinos, right? So where are all these people who are playing on weekends with their friends and family, and people who are kind of playing online, right? So all these people who know how to play because they kind of grew up playing, there's so much more to the game of just socializing and trying to get better because you want to make better decisions in life. And you kind of, I talk to so many kind of VCs and these kind of people every day who love the game of poker because they're like, it helps me make better decisions because I'm thinking of a different way. So someone could teach me, oh, by folding more hands, how can I relate that to my own life, right? And those kind of factors. And that's, I think, what 90% of players kind of think, right? That's what, and those aren't the people you will see on these live streams, and you won't see them kind of sitting on these 1-2 tables grinding for months, right? But those are a majority of the players, and that's kind of what we're kind of going after in the long run.
This has been really awesome. I've learned a lot here, and I'm very excited where you're taking this. Is there anything else you want to share before we close this down?
No, I think we kind of covered a lot of the good topics out there, what people are really interested in. So, I mean, I'm just happy to kind of get out there. And I've been doing podcasts for the last couple of weeks just because I think that there's no one out there who actually is talking about the security side of things. There's no one talking about the future of poker, and it seems a little dull right now with everything that's kind of going on. So I'm just happy to kind of share some information on what we're working on and put us out there.
When money's involved, like, people are going to get better. There's no way around it. So I think what you're doing is you're getting ahead in the right way, and we're putting the right minds in the right spot to kind of approach it in a way that's going to be good for the community, as opposed to just reacting to what ends up happening.
Exactly.
If you're worried about losing your edge, work harder. You know, poker is a meritocracy. Work harder if you're worried about losing your edge. Mana, thank you very much. I am going to make a point to stay in touch with you because I want to see where this goes. And
come to Atlanta sometime. Play on our table if you.
My mother lives in Georgia, so that's a very real possibility.
I have a password tip for people who need more secure passwords, like Dell. Take your favorite song lyric and take the first letter of each word of your favorite song lyric, and then add some numbers, maybe like how many words it is or whatever, at the end with an exclamation point. And then you'll never forget it.
Now we just need to get into Jordan's Spotify and see what song is played the most. And there's always a way around.
Thank you once again, Monet.
Yeah, that was exciting. Thank you so much.
This has been Stealing the Blinds, a weekly poker podcast for students of the game by students of the game. When you're not stacking your chips, please feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get yours. Recommend the show to your favorite donkey, fish, or whale, and head over to tbstb.com/support to show the crew some love. Until next week, stick to the plan, and may all your variants be positive.